Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome on into our Tuesday, October 14th edition of Sports Talk, folks. Steve Geller along with Charlie Long bringing it till 7 p.m. Then we'll have the Saints Hour with Mike Haas coming up on WWL 105.3 FM. That's because at 6:30 on the Big 870 AM, we've got hoops tonight. The Pelicans taking on the Rockets in Birmingham. Pregame 6:30, tip-off 7 p.m. on the Big 870 WWL AM to help us break things down. Jake Madison of the Locked On Pelicans podcast joining us now. Jake, how you been doing, man? And thank goodness some preseason hoops are here.
Yeah, I'm happy to be on talking basketball with y'all here. We get to see the Pelicans play an NBA team, even though they played some preseason games last week. So this is going to be a much better measuring stick, I think, for New Orleans to kind of see where they are heading into what's going to be a really interesting season.
Jay, curious your take on things. You know, they played those two games in Australia against non-NBA squads. Pel's 2-0 right now, and I hear a lot of fans grumbling and groaning right away saying, of course they're 2-0. Look who the competition they were going up against. But overall, your takeaways from their time in Australia for this Pel's squad?
Yeah, you know, when you looked at those two games that they played, they're not playing NBA teams. You don't need to look at the final score. The Pelicans were always going to win those games, and they should really win those games running away, which more or less they did. That was really about the eye test for New Orleans. Do things just look right for this team? And it starts with Zion Williamson. A lot has been made about the shape that he's coming into the season with. A lot has been made about the talk that he said at media day and the interviews that he's given about kind of where he is at physically and mentally. And he needed to back that up a little bit. You wanted to see some action behind it in terms of on the court. And the way he just moved out there, just looking really better than we've ever seen him before. Take away the other players on the court. Did he just move quicker than what we've seen from him in the past? And, you know, truthfully, it looked like he did. You know, in limited minutes last year, he played the best basketball of his career. And keeping him healthy and playing out there is going to be massively important for New Orleans. That's an understatement. But he is past the eye test, I think. And now we'll get to see him in this game against the Houston Rockets playing against NBA-level players. Does that still follow? That's kind of what I'm watching for with him. But he looked good in Australia just with the movements that you wanted to see from him. You know, that was similar for a guy like Trey Murphy III. This is someone who's going to be taking on a larger role. You could argue he's the number two guy in terms of offense on this team. He played like it. You've seen the expanded bag from him. Again, remove everybody else from the court here. This is not a player that's going to be able to make mid-range jumpers off the dribble unless he's actually capable of doing that. And you can see the work that he's put in to become a three-level scorer this year. And that was on display in the one game that he played. And then simple as things as like just the vibes around the team, to use a millennial word here. You know, there's a lot of team chemistry that they are building. They seem to really feel like they can compete, and there's a lot of belief inside the building and with this organization, and you saw that. They looked like they were having some fun out there. It's just the bad vibes from last year are kind of gone. It feels like a clean slate going forward, and I think having that belief that you can win every game is a really important thing. So, yeah, they weren't playing against NBA-level competition, but I do think you saw what you wanted to see from New Orleans with their trip to Australia.
You know, one thing when we talked, Jake, with Todd Graffinini late last week about the Pelicans' practice sessions, they already did training camp and all that good stuff ahead of, you know, their trip to Australia, which is just unbelievable. The first NBA team to play against an NBL team out in Australia. It's a real kind of landmark moment. It's neat. But just the thing that Graf kept mentioning over and over again was the intensity at practice is super, super high. Willie Green is kind of taking a different approach this season as well. Talking about the clean slate that you had mentioned, it's a clean slate for everybody. And just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on what you've observed from them at practice, because it feels like the early returns are very, very positive.
Yeah, you know, this is a team that actually has a lot of hunger, I think, when you look at the roster composition right now. And there was a lot of turnover. The Pelicans actually rank the, like, 30th out of 30 in terms of roster continuity going into this season. So they've turned over this roster more so than any other NBA team has. And you look at these guys, and they're hungry to prove things. Zion Williamson has a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. He's hungry to prove that he can be healthy and that he can be an all-NBA level kind of guy and isn't a bust as a number one overall pick that's not living up to his potential. Trey Murphy is eager to prove that he's an all-star this year. He said that is one of his goals that he wants to achieve this year. You have rookies in Jeremiah Fears, Derek Queen. Those are young guys that are eager to prove they belong in the NBA and to live up to their draft standing. You have Jordan Poole, who's coming from a losing two seasons with the Washington Wizards, to this team where he shows he wants to, you know, where he wants to prove that he was the guy that we saw with the Golden State Warriors, who helped lead them to a title. You even have someone like Sadiq Bey, who's missed about a year and a half of basketball, who wants to come in and prove that he's a rotation guy and a winning player. And that's just leading to an intensity in practice, I think, that's going to hopefully carry over to the regular season, an iron sharpens iron kind of idea here. So the practices have seemed really good. It just seems like this team feels a little bit refreshed from where they ended last season. Help's going to certainly do that and make these guys kind of get out there and be able to play a little bit more. But I feel really more optimistic, I think, about the start of this year than I was at the end of last season.
Yeah, Jake, you mentioned Jordan Poole. It seems like him and Zion Williamson have already developed quite a good relationship, chemistry blooming going forward. Just wondering what you've noticed from those two.
You know, I don't think it's just him and Zion. I don't think it's just Jordan Poole and Zion Williamson. I think it's Jordan Poole with everybody.
Okay.
They all love the guy here. This is someone who's just got a really great personality. You can see he's going to be a fan favorite here in New Orleans and just brings some of that, you know, I don't want to use a Dell Demps phrase here, but that young veteran kind of mentality. This is someone who's won a title, who knows what it takes. This is someone who can go out and be a 20-point-per-game scorer on a nightly basis, and he's just trying to teach and just improve whatever this team is trying to build towards right now. And I think you're seeing him do that. And, you know, as I talk to players at Media Day and throughout practices, you know, that concept of chemistry is really important. The concept of a culture is really important. When you have someone that makes things fun and you're excited to show up to work because Jordan Poole is joking around, but also goes really hard in practice, it makes you want to do that as well. And so you're seeing a lot of new guys step into leadership roles in this team, and Jordan Poole certainly is one of them. And you can see it with the way that Zion Williamson talks about him, that Trey Murphy talks about him, but even the rookie Jeremiah Fears, who's trying to take his spot if he plays well enough, you know, they have a good relationship. So he seems like he was a really good culture fit and a really good move by Joe Dumars to bring him in here.
It was almost a little bit of a controversial move at the time, Jake, but if you listen to anyone, and you're 100% right, anyone, whether it be Joe Dumars, whether it be Willie Green, whether it be the Pelicans players, they all have been raving about Jordan Poole. I remember Dumars talking about how like basketball is his life and he's a complete gym rat. Like, he can't get him out of the gym necessarily. But with Jordan Poole specifically, the range of opinion on this player is so wide, almost as wide as any kind of quote-unquote star in the NBA. If you think that he could be, you know, the third best player on a championship team like he was in Golden State, or if you think that what you saw in Washington with kind of the empty calorie numbers that didn't really necessarily contribute to winning, which kind of player you think he is, it just feels like, you know, Jordan Poole, going back to your point about proving people wrong, I think that he's right up there as well about proving the doubters wrong and then also proving the people that do believe that he can be one of those types of players that he was in Golden State, proving them right.
Yeah, I think when you look at him, you know, he's a polarizing player. I think that's kind of safe to say. You know, is he the guy that he was in Washington, empty stats, as you said, or is he the guy that was a very key piece for a Golden State Warriors team that won an NBA title? And the answer probably lies somewhere in the middle. He's going to have flashes of brilliance with this team. And then, look, he might do some things that make you scratch your head and be like, you're not Michael Jordan, get the ball to Zion, or something along those lines. And that's going to be fine, as long as it kind of, you know, is a positive over the course of hopefully 82 games, that's going to work out in favor of the Pelicans here, I think. You know, when it comes to Jordan Poole, the most important thing for him is he has a skill set that this team needs. You saw throughout the past couple of years just a lack of guys who can create their own shot and create for others here. Jordan Poole can create his own shot. He was actually one of the best pull-up shooters last year in the league, especially from three. He shot over 45% on pull-up three-pointers. So he had the ball in his hands, he was dribbling on the perimeter, and then put up a shot, and it basically just went in, and he was elite at that. And when you have a player that can do that, you have to put a defender or two on him at all times when he has the ball in his hands. That frees up Zion Williamson. That frees up Trey Murphy to have a little bit more space to operate, and that's something that this team had been lacking for a while. To have a guy that can do it from deep, not necessarily from mid-range like Brandon Ingram could, but from three where it improves your court spacing, that is a skill set this team needs. He can also play downhill, attack the basket, which should really be a strength of this Pelicans roster. And overall, it kind of follows what Joe Dumars wanted to do this summer, was get a lot more creation, whether that was their own individual shot or creating for others on this team. That is something that has been addressed with this roster. So even if he has those moments where you're like, what are you doing, Jordan Poole? This team's still going to be elevated by the skill set that he brings to New Orleans.
Talking with Jake Madison of the Locked On Pelicans podcast joining us here. And Jake, just curious if you have any kind of maybe a checklist for fans tonight that they should be looking for in this matchup against the Houston Rockets. What you're looking for? What are some things that you'd like to check off from this Birds team right now going into the year?
You want to see the Pelicans starters win these minutes. If you go back to 2 years ago when they won 49 games, it was a good season. They did that a lot by their bench beating up on other teams' benches. The starters weren't particularly effective. That can do well in the regular season. That's not going to win you games in the postseason whatsoever. You need your starters to beat opponent starters. I want to see what happens here. Really, this first quarter is going to be really interesting to me. If the starting unit, you know, gets a lead on this good Houston Rockets team that's added Kevin Durant and had an elite defense last year, that's a really good sign for feeling optimistic about this Pelicans team. If Zion Williamson is still able to get downhill and score at will against a good defensive Houston Rockets team with a really good big man rotation in Alperen Şengün, in Clint Capela, and others, that's a really encouraging sign here, I think. So you're looking for those kind of things. If the starters do really well, I feel New Orleans is going to be in a really good place because that's just simply what you need at the NBA level. When it comes to other guys, I'm looking at someone like Jeremiah Fears, the rookie. He plays downhill. That dude, zero fears, literally describes him. He can miss every shot, but he's not going to stop driving, attacking, putting pressure on the rim. It's one thing to do that against, you know, teams in Australia. It's another thing to do that at the NBA level. And I'm curious to see how efficient he is. I don't care about him making the shots. Is he simply finding ways to get into the paint and get a shot attempt up or getting fouled? That's what I'm watching for him in this game. You know, for going back to the starters, Trey Murphy, what's his role going to look like? Is he the number two guy? Is he the number three guy? Where does Jordan Poole fit into that? Those are the things I think we're trying to kind of still feel out for New Orleans. And also keep an eye on the center battle. It was Kevon Looney starting in Australia, but I thought Eve Mesi had a very good showing as a second-year player that has added a lot to his game. That's someone that they could really use a lot of growth from. You might see it on display in this one, and that could potentially earn him the starting spot on opening night.
You know, Jake, building off of something that Joe Dumars had said at not the introductory press conference, but kind of like right before media day, I think it was that Monday, he had brought up the fact that building a roster with a lot of depth and being able to play 10 to 12 players a night and having all those guys play at a maximum effort and then the wins will follow, when he was asked about what the win expectation should be for this roster. Do you think that this Pelicans team specifically has more depth than they've had in years past with the moves that Dumars has made, bringing in these two premier rookies and then also the second round pick Micah Peavy, who's apparently been really good, but also bringing in Sadiq Bey and Jordan Poole to the mix? Already the core of this team being Zion Williamson, Herb Jones, and Trey Murphy, it just feels like they've brought in extra pieces and they have a deeper roster than maybe they've had at least last year, but within the past couple of years.
Yeah, you know, I think it's about what we saw from this team 2 years ago. And I think the depth can be important, but I think depth can be overrated too. You know, you don't want to be playing 11, 12 men on any given night. And when you get into the postseason, you're playing 8 or 9 guys, 10 at the most. So the depth kind of runs out a little bit as you're trying to win games in the postseason. Now you got to get there first. So, you know, there's something to be said for that. I think more than just depth, they're looking for insurance. Insurance if Zion Williamson goes down. I think that was partially why they traded for Derek Queen. Zion Williamson has such a unique skill set, and Derek Queen also has such a unique skill set that maybe you can sub one in for the other, and that can help you keep moving if you need to. You know, I think with depth on the wing, you've seen injuries to Trey Murphy, injuries to Herb Jones. Getting a Sadiq Bey there is kind of insurance should one of them go down, that you can at least get some of the production from those guys, the defense from those guys. That's, I think, what they're looking to do. They're almost trying to kind of like injury-proof their roster a little bit. And if they do that by getting depth and some of those guys go down and you get 80% of their production, the team's talented enough that they can kind of live with that, I think.
Jake, thanks so much for the time as always, man. Tell folks where they can find you and more of the Locked On Pelicans podcast info.
Yeah, Locked On Pelicans, wherever you get your podcasts. It's on YouTube as well. We're now on the Gulf Coast Sports and Entertainment Network every weekday at 10:30 a.m., so we'll be there all season long. 5 days a week, covering all the games. Not going to miss a thing. It's going to be a lot of fun, or at least a very interesting season. So just find the Locked On Pelicans podcast basically everywhere.
Awesome stuff. Jake, are you going to be going live tonight, or are you doing a recap tomorrow?
Well, it'll be probably, the show will probably be out like 30 minutes after the game ends or so.
Awesome stuff. Always great to hear from you, Jake. Thank you.
Of course. Thanks for having me on, y'all.
That's the Locked On Pelicans podcast host Jake Madison getting ready for that 6:30 pregame coverage on 870 AM, a 7 o'clock tip-off against the Rockets. Taking a break, we'll be back with some fantasy football talk, our fantasy focus, right after this on WWL. Who dat?
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into Sports Talk, folks. On 870 AM, you can hear Pelicans pre-game coverage of their preseason matchup against the Houston Rockets. Meanwhile, coming up over on 105.3 FM after us at 7 p.m., the Saints Hour, Mike Haas will be with you, the voice of the black and gold, joining you for the whole hour. Saints Hour, don't miss that, coming up at 7 p.m. Right now, time, though, for Fantasy Focus. For that, we welcome in Joe Bartle, fantasy football expert at RotoWire. Joe, how the heck you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. It's kind of a bleak waiver wire period, and unfortunately for a lot of folks here coming up, week 8 and week 9, you're going to have 10 teams on bye over that two-week stretch. So with all the injuries happening, we've gotten to that point in the NFL season where there isn't a one-for-one solution. It's just, here's a conglomerate of people. Hopefully you figure it out, and we never do, and it never seems to matter week to week either. So it's a frustrating stretch, that's for sure.
Joe, I was devastated with the London game this past weekend. You know, Courtland Sutton stock, Garrett Wilson stock, nobody could throw the football, especially the Jets, who, you know, finished a game in the year of our Lord 2025 with negative 10 net passing yards. Unbelievable. I want to get your thoughts, though. Garrett Wilson's apparently going to be out for a couple of weeks with that hyperextended knee. I mean, you just kind of abandon the Jets really at that point, right? Because Garrett Wilson's basically been their passing attack.
Can I interest you in somebody you're very familiar with and Mason Taylor? I mean, okay. It's not a massive sell. I'll be very clear. I loved Mason Taylor coming out of college. I thought there was actually a lot of smoke to him being a late first round pick. And of course, ends up going in the first couple picks of the second round, which was reflective of a guy that I thought could be a, we'll call him, for lack of a better term, a three down specialist for a tight end. Like, we have those running backs that can do everything that Mason Taylor could do. Now, the only issue in fantasy is typically that then means they just end up blocking because they'll go to a bad team. They won't use him as a pass catcher. My hope was rookie year Sam Laporta with maybe half as many touchdowns. And we probably won't even get to the half as many touchdowns because the Jets' offense is so bad. But I do think it's possible Mason Taylor elevates to be a better pass catcher for the Jets and be the best one. Now, it's, again, the Jets could go ahead and trade for a receiver. That would be like the dumbest decision I could imagine possible. But if they really are trying to see what happens more with Justin Fields in this offense, you can't do that with Alan Lazard and Josh Reynolds. So, like, they have to have something. I think Mason Taylor is the obvious guy that'll get more involved. And again, it's in a 12-team league, you're maybe considering Mason Taylor as like the 10th tight end or 11th tight end of full point PPR. It's not like an obvious it's an obvious situation, but whereas you would normally say just get rid of every single jet, I do understand that premise. I think Mason Taylor, at least for the little value that he costs, is one that I would look at.
Joe, I look like a stud to my teenage son this past week. He was looking for running back help, and I suggested picking up Kamani Vidal over Hassan Haskins. That ended up being the right play there. Looking now for some other running back help out there, what do you feel like a guy in the Arizona Cardinals in Bam Knight? Is this someone worth rostering?
Yeah, let's put into context. I think Kamani Vidal was an awesome call. Great work on that one. The Chargers made it more difficult than it had to, in my mind, at least throughout the week, because we had Daniel Popper, who I believe is one of the best reporters, at least from a team perspective, working for The Athletic. And Daniel Popper talked about Hassan Haskins being the next guy up. And then you had Greg Roman saying, well, both Kamani Vidal and Hassan Haskins are getting involved. It's like, guys, Kamani Vidal is clearly better. Like, what are we doing here? And thankfully, right, we saw that transpire actually on the football field now. It was against one of the league's worst defenses, especially against the run, in the Dolphins. I don't think it quite transpires again this week, but you play Vidal in most scenarios. And I'm saying that because I would rather have Kamani Vidal over Bam Knight, over Michael Carter, any of the flavor of the week du jour running backs. Maybe Woody Marks was also dropped during the Texans bye week, for example. Like, I think, as a Packer fan, the Packers defense has been very disappointing the past month now or so, but I do think they'll be stout against a guy like Bam Knight, who really feels like, to me, only a guy that runs up the middle. I think Michael Carter is going to be far more valuable in that match against the Cardinals, and it could even get worse if Kyler Murray doesn't play again. And I think he might not play because the Cardinals are on a bye the following week after. So to me, Kamani Vidal over Bam Knight's a no-brainer. I'd rather play Vidal, and I think I'd rather have like Tajay Spears over Bam Knight as well, too. And, you know, again, probably even Woody Marks as well.
You know, one player that I think has gotten off to a slowish start, and he was so unbelievable this past year. It's his expectations are higher than everyone else. Saquon Barkley, who's the number 13 ranked running back in PPR leagues and those formats, the matchup against the Giants, it just feels like, you know, Joe, to be honest, what happened with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith both kind of crying about their lack of production in the passing game, it feels like maybe the new OC of Philadelphia is trying to overthink things. I know that Saquon's also been dealing with some kind of injury bug as well, but just kind of your overall thoughts on Saquon Barkley. Obviously, for anyone that took first-round stock into him like I did, we're going to continue to start him, but the slow start is a little bit concerning.
It's so funny. I think let's tackle this in two ways, because you mentioned the key part for me. Saquon Barkley is running back 13 in ESPN scoring formats right now. If you told me that the guy I'm drafting in the first round was going to be near top 10 in this position, you wouldn't be happy about it, but you're like, okay, you know, that's fine. I mean, rookie year Bijan Robinson was a perfect example where he ended up, I think, finishing like right at running back 11 or 10, and people are drafting him fourth or fifth overall. And people will be upset and hold that against him. But the reality was, as a tough situation, he was a rookie, still ends up getting pretty good value, and the hype just got out of control. With all the injuries, and especially ineffective play, that's the worst part of it for those late first-round guys, even like CeeDee Lamb or Justin Jefferson, who have been affected by either injuries or injuries to their quarterbacks. Like, the guys you're considering around Saquon Barkley outside of Christian McCaffrey haven't hit either. So it's funny that you are not the only one, but there are other people upset about it too. The Kevin Petullo offensive coordinator for the Eagles part of things with A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith is absolutely the correct thing. Like, you are hitting it right on the nose. I have a four-year-old that I feel like I am dealing with on a minute-by-minute basis. I will take him to and from school. I'll talk with my wife about things that matter in life. And it does not matter, because the four-year-old, when he wants to talk, will tell you he needs to talk, interrupting, whatever. And maybe there's better parenting skills that I could be deploying right now, but that's exactly the point. Kevin Petullo, the offensive coordinator, probably should be doing better parenting, or at least managing his star receivers and the running back, saying, no, I understand you guys are frustrated with winning football games. We want to have Saquon Barkley involved. That is the backbone of our entire team, is having Saquon Barkley do what he did this past year. I would rather get that right than you guys, and hopefully if I do get Saquon Barkley right, then I can have A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith also be a factor. That has not happened. And to me, it's just incredibly bad coaching, managing the situation. Nick Sirianni, same thing as well, too. You'd think he'd probably step in at some point, and yet has yet to do so. There isn't an answer. You're playing Saquon Barkley. I think if you're doing like a rest of season question, I think Saquon Barkley, I would still probably draft, if we were doing a draft today, probably in the second or third round, because it has to turn around, because how can it not? But this is a certainly frustrating situation, as it is trying to tell a four-year-old to stop talking over the parents.
Joe, if I'm looking for wide receiver help out there, should I turn to Buccaneers wide out Tez Johnson, someone that, you know, it doesn't seem to matter who Baker Mayfield's been throwing the ball to lately, dealing with a number of injuries over there, just getting the job done, and if wondering if Tez Johnson can be a legit producer in my fantasy lineup?
Yeah, sure. Tez Johnson, Cameron Johnson, Sterling Shepard, Cade Otton, all these really important fantasy names that we were all expecting entering the year. And I mean, no, I joke about it, but goodness, this is going to be a frustrating thing. And the worst part about this is the Buccaneers are against what should be the primest of prime matchups in this Detroit secondary, who probably will lose Brian Branch for being stupid as well against the right. Chiefs. Like, this should be a spot for Baker Mayfield to throw for 500 yards. And if that is correct, if we are all assuming that Baker Mayfield can rise above everything, all the circumstances once more, maybe the answer is everyone. But I have a really hard time figuring out, especially if Mike Evans eventually makes his return after a multi-game absence due to hamstring injury, what that looks like. And is Emeka Buka officially out? We've heard week to week. I assume he will be. It's just really tough when we're making waivers today to say, okay, well, if we think Chris Godwin's out and we think Emeka Buka's out and we think Mike Evans will be there, how does Sterling Shepard play into this? Does Tez Johnson, I'm getting the workload like we've seen the past couple weeks. I would lean towards Tez over Cameron Johnson. Cameron Johnson got more receptions last week, but he's been primarily the team's special team. He's been primarily the team's returner. And more importantly, Cameron Johnson only got the bump in snaps this past week when they had the Emeka Buka injury, whereas Tez Johnson has been playing more the past couple weeks. That's the one that I'm kind of speculating on. But frankly, if I can get him after waivers are processed, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday night, whatever it is, as opposed to going for like a priority fab or putting fab on it overall, that's what I would choose to do. Because I think there's so much uncertainty with the Buccaneers and only two teams on bye. Theoretically, it's just Zay Flowers among the receivers that you're losing, or I guess Khalil Shakir. Like, there shouldn't be an emphasis that are needed to get waiver wire receivers. And I think I would do my best to try to avoid the situation if possible.
You know, Joe, as we enter kind of the midway part of the season, are there any kind of players that you're looking at different rosters in your league and saying, I need to kind of get on this guy now because I think he can kind of shoot up in the second half of the season? Maybe not necessarily buy low candidates, players that have even played decently well, but you just really want them on your roster in the second half of the season, no matter what it costs.
Yeah, I think the question is always better asked, especially after we get through Bye-mageddon, which has six teams on bye, and that's week eight. Like, I can't prioritize targeting people rest of season when I'm struggling to start people on a weekly basis. So really the answer for me is Derrick Henry, and I know it's not quite an easy answer because typically the person that has Derrick Henry drafted him highly, therefore isn't willing to move him. They had to wait through this whole stretch of Lamar Jackson being out, probably gets him back week eight. But that is the key for me. Like, I'll pay not quite what the Derrick Henry premium was when you drafted him, but I will go ahead and give up good draft capital, or I guess I'll give up good roster capital, with the Derrick Henry buy being done and theoretically the Ravens offense up. Like, the people that drafted Derrick Henry have to be upset with this experience thus far. That wasn't what they're signing up for. And Derrick Henry's been healthy. Like, you can remain steadfast as much as you want, but this has been a frustrating month now. And I do think there are going to be low opportunities still within that Ravens offense, but with Lamar Jackson back, with the Ravens basically playing for their playoff lives here in October at this point, I think Derrick Henry is going to be one of those that gets the volume, gets the workload, and I would be very happy to go ahead and trade for basically what was his draft cost.
Yeah. And, Joe, one last one for me. The fact you look at streaming options for defenses in Week 7, it's always difficult to know what's on, you know, different people's waiver wires out there. But just curious for some matchups that might intrigue you that could be that are usually out on the waiver wires that folks can pick up for defense-wise.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. This is a brutal week to stream defenses, and I do it almost exclusively. Last week, I streamed both the Titans and Raiders in various leagues. Like, that's how bleak it was. Wow. I think it's a similar sort of spot this week, too. Unfortunately, if the Packers are somehow available, you'd obviously want them against the Cardinals. I don't know if that ends up happening. I don't mind the Steelers against the Browns, for example, but a lot of people have the Steelers as well, too. And you're also losing the Bills, which people are often starting, so there's another team that probably wants a streaming defense. It's not a great answer. I really isn't, but unfortunately, I think the answer is nobody among the obvious streaming candidates, and it might be more on a league-to-league basis.
Gotcha. Always appreciate the time, Joe. What can folks find? I see your waiver wire article up at RotoWire, but what else can the folks get up out there?
Yeah, I did get the updates in earlier today. Luther Burden was probably the beneficiary of DJ Moore, but we can read all about those on my Twitter, JB Fantasy Sports. And I have my big betting sheet coming out tomorrow. pick every game against the spread, every game as well as the totals too. Been okay, about 500. If nothing else, you can read some quippy things about how much I hate the Titans.
I appreciate the time, Joe. Always awesome insights. Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Joe.
Joe Bartle, fantasy football expert at RotoWire, joining us there. You can follow him on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, at JB Fantasy Sports, also at RotoWire. Taking a break, be back with more sports talk after this. Stay tuned on WWL.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, all you Hoodads, who's looking for tickets to the next Saints home game when the Black and Gold take on Tampa Bay in the Caesars Superdome? That's October 26th, where you can score two premium tickets to the matchup plus a pair of VIP tailgate passes from Bullseye Event Group. We're talking open bar with premium liquor, all-you-can-eat buffet with celebrity chef Aaron May, and that's all overlooking Champion Square. Winning's easy. Go to WWL.com/contest and enter one time every day for your chance to win Saints Buccaneers tickets from Saints Radio WWL. Taking a break. We'll be right back as we close things out here on Sports Talk, getting ready for the Saints Hour, coming up next on 105.3 FM at 7 p.m. We're closing up shop here on our Tuesday, October 14th edition of Sports Talk, getting ready for the Saints Hour, coming up with Mike Haas on 105.3 FM. If you're currently looking for Pelicans preseason action, their pregame coverage is going on right now on 870 AM, leading to that 7 o'clock tip-off against the Houston Rockets. Looking forward to hearing more from the Birds this evening on WWL. And folks, we also have baseball in action this evening. It's going to be game two between the LA Dodgers and the Milwaukee Brewers. Man, oh man, Charlie, those Mariners putting it to the poor Blue Jays.
Yeah, no, I told Mike this earlier that we're heading to my nightmare World Series between the Dodgers and the Mariners. So hopefully the Brew Crew can tie it up here against the Dodgers tonight, because realistically, man, the way they lost that game last night in game one, where Blake Snell is unbelievable for eight innings, and then they have that glimmer of hope at the very end just to fall short. Felt so bad for Milwaukee, and hopefully the Brewers can tie that series up. I still want to see the Brewers win it all. As far as I know, I might be wrong on this, Steve, I don't think they've ever won it. So that'd be a pretty cool story, especially like an underdog type of story when you're going up against a team like the Dodgers, who obviously the highest payroll.
Real quick, what do you know about Yamamoto on the mound tonight? I haven't seen many Dodgers games this year.
He's talented. I don't think he lived up really to expectations, though, Steve. When they signed him out of Japan, he was like, oh, they just got an ace. He's been good, but he hasn't been like top-tier ace level. So hopefully the Brew Crew can get to him tonight.
7 o'clock action all on WWL, folks. Pelicans preseason game, 870 a.m. The Saints Hour coming up next on 105.3. Who dat? Have a good night.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.